Welcome to the Art Scene, presented each week by UALR Public Radio. The following program is the first of four that we have taken from the Art Scene archives as specials for this holiday season. In June last year, 2014-15, several Central Arkansas galleries had exhibitions of Silver Point art in Little Rock at UALR, the Arkansas Art Center, and Hearn Fine Art. In North Little Rock, Greg Thompson Fine Art. I had two guests, Marjorie Williams Smith, very well known and admired for her Silver Point drawings, and Anne Wagner, curator of drawings at the Arkansas Art Center. And during the discussion, the name Viktor Kulbach came up, a Russian artist whose work in Silver Point had been up at the Arkansas Art Center in the summer of 1999. Marjorie and her husband, A.J. Smith, both have learned the skill and create exquisite drawings directly influenced by the Russian artist. In the Art Scene archives, I found the interview I did with Viktor Kulbach and play it now as a special for the holiday season.
I was impressed then that in a town like Little Rock, you have such a treasure as this museum. It's incredible how professional and how nice and kind these people are. At each level in the museum, I had such a fantastic respect and help. I must tell to people who maybe do not know the respect that your museum has in the world, because I spoke with people in France, in England, and especially in New York. It's incredibly powerful tool you have here. And the work which was done by Tausend Wolf, it's absolutely incredible. And I can't find other example in my professional life of something which is built with such a strength and love, real love. High professionals working to build the beauty in this world. I'm very impressed.
An exhibit of Silver Point drawings opened at the Arkansas Art Center earlier this month, and that was the artist, Viktor Kulbach, who wanted on record his reaction to this institution, its director and staff, on this his first visit to Little Rock. Silver Point drawing is a technique that had long fallen into disuse from its heyday in the 15th and 16th centuries, when it was favored by such masters as Leonardo da Vinci and Hans Holbein. Viktor Kulbach was born in Russia, where he received his early art instruction, but his refusal to conform to state demands and conventions blocked his career, and he was forced to leave his country. Now living in Paris, he has won international recognition and acclaim for his work in Silver Point. He talks here about the technique, how he came upon it, and his work within the genre.
You know, it was not exactly early Renaissance drawings. They tried to draw with anything they found in nature, and they tasted a lot of materials, because from what I know, in 13th and 14th century, they already knew about 65 different natural colors.
Mm-hmm.
But by experience, they chose only 12 to make the oil paintings. It was just experience. And when they tried a copper, lead, gold, whatever they could find, they found that the most beautiful line was made by this silver wire. And they tried to use it, and all of them, they wrote letters to their friends, and they're describing this technique as the most beautiful technique in the world.
Did the thickness of the wire vary depending on what they were doing with it?
I don't think so, no, because you sharp it. You can make a real needle from almost any sizes, so I don't think that it was a matter.
How do you sharpen them? Is it just done by hand with a blade?
Yes, I'm trying to buy the silver wire, which is closer to the size I like to work with, and there is a limitation in holes in the holders.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my preoccupation. It's not at all the size of a wire.
Why were you drawn to it?
I was very impressed when I've seen the first drawing in silver point in the museum. I just was so impressed by the beauty of this technique, and I tried to find out how they managed to draw so beautifully. And I tried to go to the libraries and ask my friends and people working in the museums. And one day I went in, went to the library, and there was a very tall man trying to get a book, which was very high on the bookshelf. And the book was tied by other books, and one fold on my head. Mm-hmm. And it was a book about old techniques. It was almost open on the page, which is which was describing this old technique. And that's how I started.
No, that's a story that's almost hard to believe.
Yes. So,
well, because I was going to ask you, you went to art school. You were born in Russia.
Yes.
You went to art school when you were only 12.
Yes, right.
And the teaching at the art school was fairly traditional then, things like this. There was no real way that you could find out this particular aspect of art in the school itself.
No, I've never heard about this technique when I was a boy, and nobody taught us this technique. But the school that I had in Moscow at that particular time was a very, very interesting one, because it was attached to the Academy of Art of Russia. And we had very, very well-trained teachers, and they did not try to teach us their view of the world or of the beauty. They were trying to teach us real technique and details of these techniques, and I appreciate it very much.
So when you found this book, this detailed technical treatise, did you go with it to one of your teachers and ask for help?
No, it's happened when I was an adult, and I already left Russia. It was not happened in Russia.
So you didn't start actually working in Silver Point until after you left Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And you make your home in Paris now, right?
Yes, now.
Is that where you found the treatise?
Yes.
Then do you speak French, Russian, English?
English and a little bit of Italian, yes.
And a bit of Italian. Mm-hmm. Well, the Italian masters, you'd probably want to be able to feel the warmth of the language and the paintings.
Of course. Yes. And for me, that particular period of Italian Renaissance and German Renaissance was the highest point
of this technical
yeah. and other techniques too. They were incredibly well-trained craftsmen.
Yeah. It's the wellspring of all modern art, really, isn't it?
Yes, but I don't know if we appreciate it as I'd like everybody to appreciate it, because for me, really, it's the heart of beauty in Europe and the whole world.
Then you create your own surfaces on which you then put these images?
Yes, right.
And how do you do that?
Each time I prepare the paper in a very special way, and it's related to what I'm going to draw on it. If it's a very strong image, I build my surface in a very special way, a little bit stronger, and with a lot of different surfaces, and so I play with that. And if the image which I'm going to draw is very soft, very kind, very, very gentle, I'm building the surface in this way too.
Now, looking at some of your drawings, some of them looked as though there were several layers of paper.
No, there are several levels of preparation.
Okay, so what would be beneath, what would you put preparatory to putting the paper on?
At that good old days, they used chicken bones, which they burned.
Mm-hmm.
They crushed them in powder, and they mixed this powder with the glue, and then they put it on the surface of the paper. I changed this procedure a little bit, and I'm using the marble powder, which I buy through a friend of mine who is working with the marble, so he can...
It's almost like marble dust. Then,
exactly. It's a marble dust which I mix with the glue.
And that you found works for just about all the images you're trying to impose upon them?
Yes, right.
Looking at what you've created, it's amazing how much emerges the more you look at it. And I just wanted to ask you, from your years in Russia and the traditional art training that you had, and the fact that you were something of a nonconformist and didn't maybe march to the party tune. Has that still left some impression upon what you do and how you approach things?
I'm trying to get rid of all these memories because it was not very pleasant memories. But I think that, of course, I'm a little bit jealous of all these people who were born in Italy or in America or in France, and not me. But now, with age, I think that it creates in my life some kind of a point of, call it in French, comparaison, where you can compare something with something. It's very important, I think. It was a very difficult life. The problems were real. Sometimes it was a question of death and life. So it was very hard, but very strong experience.
Well, to grow up through it and survive it gives you a strength that a lot of people don't have.
I think so. When some of my French friends coming to cry about their tiny small problems, they are tiny small for me, but they're not tiny small for them. So I'm trying to explain them that it's not real problem. It's just natural life and natural problems of each day. So it's not a big tragedy.
Much reference, and we've just talked about the interest you have, the devotion to the 15th and 16th century, to the early masters in Silver Point, and the Holbein and Da Vinci particularly, looking at your drawings, the faces looking out with their antique styles of headwear, made me realize how you can take a modern face and with accoutrement make them look historic. And then when you look at those old paintings, you realize the faces on those paintings could walk the streets around us now. They have a wonderful contemporary look about them.
I'm delighted that you see it in that way. And they are people living with us today. And just I'm trying to put them in a special environment which shows how beautiful and complicated and strong this expression of a soul on their faces.
Yes. You're quoted as saying you never paint a face with an expression, with a smile, because for you a smile is a mask, and of course it is. It's your social face that in a still expression, the eyes then reflect what the person is behind those eyes, the soul of the person. Looking at the way you... The first thing that hits me when I see your drawings are the mouth and the eyes, the wonderful shape of the lips and the liquid aspect of the eyes. You can almost see them shimmering. And they all seem so similar. And I looked at them and I thought, and there was something in the other introduction, Mr. Wolfe's, that there's a certain amount of representation of yourself within all your paintings. It's almost like a family resemblance. And I was going to ask you, are they modeled, or do you have in your mind one particular family, one particular face that keeps coming back when you're drawing somebody?
You know, it's a very mysterious procedure. I start from one eye, then I start to draw the nose, and the eye says, no, it's not my nose. You have to change it. I'm sorry, it doesn't belong to this face. So I change it. I'm trying to find the right nose for this eye. Then it's exactly, they're together, the eye and the nose, against of me when I'm trying to draw the lips. Most of these faces which are on the exhibition now, they are from my imagination. They're not real people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to do now, I will base my future drawings on the real people, because I discovered that I put maybe too much of myself in this drawing, and I'd like to show the deepness and the strength of other faces, with their past, with their future, with their present.
You have one face in the collection that looks almost like a Mexican peasant, that is totally different, has no resemblance to any of the other faces.
Well, you notice right away, this is a real face, and there is another one which is the face of an old man. There are two based on the real faces.
Now, the old man's face was remarkable because it was one of the first I saw when Tom was showing them to me, that the eyes were looking directly out at the world. The others, they're all at an angle, very introspective and far removed from the person who's looking at the picture. And I looked at that face and I thought to myself, well, he may be an old man. You've described it as the face of an old man. But if he's an old man, he was a very, very strong old man. And then I looked at it and I thought, you know, it has the conformation of Michelangelo's David.
Well, it's a surprise for me. But this gentleman, he's Russian,
mm-hmm.
and I found his face in one book which was made by an American photographer when he was traveling in Russia. And from what I understood, from the legend under the photo, he was on the top of the local Communist Party in some small city somewhere in Russia.
He certainly has a very strong face. Another image that caught my imagination was the one of the teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got a very slightly green wash, green tint to the whole picture. There's a weary, almost disenchanted look about him that's very much part, and particularly with what we've been hearing with the tragedies in Colorado and all around the country, it seems to catch that betwixt childhood and maturity that leaves so many of us questioning and lost and wondering. And at the very end, you have a green man. And I looked at the two, and I wondered if there was a connection.
No, there is no any connection. No, one, the first one, teenager, was based too on the real face of a son of a friend of mine, and other was from my imagination. But I'm always trying to put to these faces something real, and so maybe that's why they were linked.
My guest is Viktor Kulbach, talking about his work in Silver Point Drawing. You also have some still life, delicate flowers, marbles, a little glass, and a wonderful head of a horse. I think the horse's head is something that just is unique. It has a beauty and a strength and a symmetry and an intelligence and sort of a spirit to it that very few animals really do have.
You know, when I draw a flower or a horse or some other animal, a bird, for me, there is no difference between human face and all these things. For me, flower as alive and complicated and something which is completely, we forget about these things. We leveled them. We discovered all these stupid things about somebody who doesn't suffer, somebody who suffers, and such, et cetera. For me, they belong to the same world. So mm-hmm. I drew them exactly the same way I drew the human face.
How long does it take for you to prepare the page, to start the image, to draw the image out of the paper?
It takes 2, 3, 4 days. It really depends on the drawing I'm going to do. But that's the way. And drawing itself, I make one small drawing. It takes about a month to make one drawing.
And then with some you use watercolors. Another one, I saw the word sanguine or sanguine.
Mm-hmm.
What is that? Is that a material,
it's
chalk
a natural,
or something?
Yes, exactly. It's some kind of a chalk. It's absolutely natural material. They are different colors. Some of them, they're deep red. Some of them. I build a little bit yellowish, et cetera, et cetera. So you just pick the right color.
And they come from the natural soil surfaces.
Exactly. All materials I'm using, they're completely natural. I make my own pastels. I buy stones, I break them, I make the powder, and I mix them with the special glues.
Now, the ones that you've used, the chalk or the slightly different surface connections, they're not quite so delicate. There's not quite that film of mystery over the finished product that you have with some of the other plant when you've used just the watercolor and the silver point.
Mm-hmm.
Was that deliberate? You wanted to achieve that effect?
Yes.
You talked about the birds and how you start with the eyes. Now, there's a falcon, and the first thing I saw in the falcon was the eye and the way he is looking directly at you who are looking at him. What is it about the eye that is so significant? For you, it's the starting point?
It's the starting point, and it's a window through which soul is watching and observing the world.
Which eye do you start with?
Left one, let's say.
Now, one painting is a double portrait where you've got the face and then all of a sudden I'm looking at it and tilted it and there was the other face. It's almost like a doppelganger. Is that what you intended?
You know, when you put two faces on one page, there is something very complicated happened between these two faces. There is always a mystery of the relationship between two human beings. That's what I tried to do. And, you know, I make the portraits, my friends, they order me the portraits of themselves or their children, and I always tell them, do not put two or three boys or girls on the same page, because they need to have their own space to live and to develop this mysterious energy which is coming from the soul. And when you have two or three faces on the same page, one of them always kills others.
Mm-hmm.
He's so strong and he needs a lot of space, and he's just taking the space from others. And I always succeeded by doing that. I just asked my friends not to do it, and one of them insisted to put two children. And 1 month ago, he called me and asked me to separate them. It was so obvious for him that it doesn't work.
Yeah. Then that explains also, when you look at the paintings from the Renaissance that are groups, Holbein and his successors through the 16th and 17th centuries, who became court painters and were required to do family portraits with groups, must have had the same problems.
The same, I'm absolutely sure. And if you look closely at the portraits of the paintings of Memling, for example, you will see that all these faces, they came from him, his imagination, and only one, it was, I suppose, somebody who ordered this painting, was a real person, but you can see him right away. And when you make these faces from your imagination, you can adjust one face to another one, but you cannot do it with the real people in the same space. It's very, very difficult, complicated job.
So when you did this particular portrait, this particular painting, drawing, you were experimenting to see how you could do the one with the other?
No, I think that that's what I said. Draw the second face, which helped to pass through the expression of the first one. I'm sure that it will be absolutely impossible to do it with the real face. They belong to the same world, and I helped to build something a little bit more complicated in this world. So it's not even faces, it's some kind of a ambiance in the drawing. which
It's almost an enigma in the background.
Yes, exactly.
Yes. Then you had two that you described with phrases. There was a young man, and the phrase was, I hope he will never get married. And I looked at it, and I thought, now, either you know something about this young man that marriage wouldn't fit his mode of life, but talking about the eyes and the mouth, to me they didn't match. I looked at the eyes first and then at the mouth, and it was almost as though his personality was split.
You are incredibly sensitive person. That's exactly what I was trying to build. I tried to build somebody who is very sensitive and who is living just without skin in this world. He's incredibly complicated and contradictory inside of himself. And to put another person as a wife, it could be even worse.
Disaster. Yeah.
Yes, a disaster.
Then the other one was an older woman. She is always right. And I thought to myself, that's almost the counter image of the young man who's so ambivalent.
Yes, it's exactly. I definitely, it's not the woman he has to marry. Yes.
No. The green man at the end, to get back to him, there's a lot of mythology about green and green men. Green was supposed to be a very unlucky color. Why did you choose it? Why did you make such a very striking, it was almost really looking through a watery film, a veil that's dividing him from reality?
I never used any kind of a symbols. I just hate it. I think mm-hmm. that painters who used the symbols in their work, that they were not good painters. They could not deliver the message out of this symbols. No, it's just no, green for me, it's a very, very nice color. It's an incredibly calm color, which is very intimate and very, very close to some, let's say, very special situation when you are alone and you can be just yourself.
You find that, though, when you're doing all your drawings, as you get close to completion of one, is that same feeling of calmness and of achievement?
Yes.
That was Russian artist Viktor Kubak, whose works in Silver Point were up at the Arkansas Art Center in summer 1999. That interview was taped while he was in Little Rock and aired on May the 24th, 1999, and has been presented today as a special from the Art Scene Archives for this holiday season, the first of four such, including the annual World of the Willows, which airs next Sunday. And that concludes this week's program. Please join us next weekend at the same time. I'm Ann Nicholson. Thank you for listening.
The Art Scene is a presentation of UALR Public Radio.